nothing. No thing or moment that has ever made me feel as much as this one. I thought I'd felt lost before. I thought I could never feel anything more, but in fact, it seems you can feel to an infinite level. Then I realised this was weirdly not about me. This wasn't about my loss, it was about something more. I'd lost something that was not me, but more. It was about them, and I'd never really cared about them. The last thing that had happened that had taught me about loss, I'd torn my human part apart. I love things. I mean, I really love things. I love nice things, and I love them a lot. I mean, material goods. I'm one of the world's, I suppose, few happy consumers. Sadly, I mean, these things, in the majority of cases, are made by humans. I dislike humans. No, that's not enough. I don't dislike humans, I loathe them. No, that's still not enough. Loathing is not enough for what I feel. I hate them. Sorry. I'm sorry if that hurts your feelings. I just do. I'm other. I'm something different. I'm a werewolf, and I'm hated for nothing more than being me. The thing I am. Don't get me wrong, I know some of you are enamoured with the idea of the beast. But things change when you meet one of us. We're not some lovelorn, soppy, misunderstood puppy, as you realise that, and then, well, we end you. Sorry, there is a relevant reason for pointing out why I hate humans. Well, okay, I hate the majority of humans, but some are really sickeningly special. The minds, the ideas and stuff are amazing. The few rational and irrational creatives and philosophers of your race are so special. They're touched by the other, maybe. Touched by the now and what I know as, I don't know, magic and shit. Maybe muses exist and you fuckers get them. It's such a rare thing to happen, though. Most humans waste a life of mundanity and often hate living it. That's ironic, right? Even the basest of you think you are special when you're not. Yet you're so capable of such amazing things right from birth. Hannah Arendt, a genius herself, was so right. So I love the design and the creativity of a few of you. I love the most beautiful of the beautiful things. The, I don't know, profound concepts and thoughts that are constructed and deconstructed down to their building blocks. But mostly, I love the stuff you create. I love that 0.0000, probably 0.1% of stuff that shows a spark of magic or genius that can pervade the human psyche. Having said that, I have to make you aware that I'm not one of those followers of fashion or something like that. I believe in style, and style is the hardest thing to understand. Never mind, actually have. Oh, and I don't own these incredible things to display my wealth or show others that I am something special. Others should never get to see them. I am a jealous lover and hoarder of my things. I hate the have to show people the most. They have beautiful things, but just not for the right reasons, not just to enjoy the best of the best. They have them just to own them. They are told that the designer is key. They look for the label. They bear that to the world to try to be accepted as whatever the concept of that brings them. They're the losers, the rich losers. They do not even have the saving grace of being decadently self-defeating. My home in Manchester was my temple to design, art and creativity of you. Oh, myself. Those greats, Antoni Gaudi, Marcel Brau, Charles and Reims, Salvatore Ferragamo, Dior, Balsengia, Garavani, Macintosh, Periand, Breuer, Rembrandt's landscape with cottages was on the wall, and his storm of the Sea of Galilee was stolen for me to order. Giovanni's Venus with a mirror was another, let's say, dodgy acquisition. Le Pigeon au Petit Pois by Pablo Picasso was a particular favourite. But they'll never be seen again after the fire. And that is before we get to my garage where I kept my dream vehicles. Ferrari F40, original E-Type, mint in silver, 6 miles. I could go on, but it hurts as... And there was the fire. The loss of that site at the time, that home, well, that home had been mine and Fenn's everything. They were my everything. It was my spiritual temple. The loss when it was burned down by the vampire bitch. It was worse than killing me in a way. My soul, my thing, the things that made me were gone. To get back to the feelings of now, I'd thought that that loss was pain. I thought that was all the feel that anything could ever feel. This new pain, this pain now that I suffered now was more than all that I could ever suffer. The loss of my things wasn't only my only sense of loss in my life either. In my past, I'd also killed what I thought at the time was the love of my life. It's a story I haven't shared with you, I'm sorry. I've shared it with you fabulous listeners in detail, although many of you have requested it of me. I'm just not ready to say it. Go listen to episode 19 from way back. The one I loved, she was a werewolf in a tribe in Sirgut. Hopefully I don't have to go into much more detail than that. We'd been married long before Fenn, my wolf soul, and I even got together. Hopefully you realise that Fenn has been linked to others over the past couple of thousand years. I know it's weird that I have a wife I did not know of, but she was wonderful, and we caught up again one fateful night in St. Andrews. In St. Andrews, in Fife of all places. It's properly confusing as I explain it here, I know it is, but... I loved her. I thought or thunked or whatever that I love her. I loved her. I don't know. But apparently it wasn't love. I don't know. It was what I felt now was this love? Was love meant to be this painful? I mean, Azza was beautiful, my wife, and she reintroduced me back into my family's arms. My werewolf brothers and sisters and I got to know... Well, we got back together and I got to know them and ran with them on the crisp, snowy peaks of the Ural Mountains. Then, as usual with any story that pertains to me and life, I fucked up. Go listen to the episodes from around about episode 20. You get the whole story. I'd pissed off the pack, and my life was under threat, and as my wife was being used as leverage against me, which, well, it seemed a bit unfair on her, to be honest. Well, probably felt it unfair on me, I don't know. So I killed that thing, the thing that I thought I loved the most at the time, had murdered her, so she could not be used against me as blackmail or as a hostage. I couldn't allow her to be hurt, because that would hurt me. It was, I suppose it was, yeah, it was still about me, wasn't it? This pain I felt now was no longer just about me. Her wolf soul went free on the human companion's death, and now we find the same soul linked to my little Sally. Why the fuck do I keep saying that, my little Sally? I don't fucking own her. She's not, she's her. I don't own her. The pain comes flooding back. Could they couldn't have killed Sally. It's all a trick. Maybe I made a mistake torturing, abusing, and playing with a vampire queen for those decades in the basement. Huh? I didn't realize it'd bring anything like this. I don't believe in karma, but I believe in revenge, and this was hers in full swing, but what I had done in the past was done, and I couldn't take it back. I wish I could. But I could feel this. Samurat, the blood goddess, had either read, you know, Machiavelli's Prince, or she'd learnt this stuff just by living for such a long time. She was obviously really intelligent, and, well, she's a goddess, isn't she? So she's got an unwarranted power, I suppose. She knew that when dealing with an enemy, you completely destroy them. I mean, that's if you respect them, I suppose. You don't do anything that the enemy can, you know, recover from. You can't let them be able to rebuild back to a position of power. You can't give them a chance to come back. They have to be done. I don't know, I thought I'd killed her. I'd fucked up on her. I mean, she was brilliant in her malevolence. In other circumstances, I would want to sit at this woman's knee and learn from her. Learn how to do this with this much, I don't know, spite and horror. Sammy was good at this mental torture. I'd only killed her brother. She was so good, and it allowed me to admire her for a moment. I don't think there is any harm in admiring your enemies. It means you do not take them lightly. I'd already done that with the Vampire Queen, and look where that had got me. She'd destroyed my stuff, and I'd been killed. Burnt to death, but kicked out of hell and heaven and sent back here, and now she had. I don't know for sure, but I think she'd killed my unborn pups, my Sally and my favourite Malcolm. That was the worst part of the torture. I didn't know for sure, and that brought me some hope. And hope is torture in my eyes. If I knew they were alive or dead, then I could settle my mind. She knew, as long as I was not sure, that I was hoping. If I was hoping, I would not be 100% sure about my actions or reactions. Keeping the enemy guessing was being done to a fine standard.
The Professor. I was utterly ripped from a fitful sleep. To be frank, my dreams can be most unpleasant as I sought the memories of a past I would rather forget. Having a long life means I have a greater bibliography of memories to process. I have done some pitiless things in my past, but I've also done some incredibly brilliant world-saving and world-changing things. I may have mentioned before that I was the father of modern democracy and all that, but for some reason, those thoughts don't flit into my mind during my sleeping hours. Perhaps God doesn't think I deserve to have pleasant dreams. We all know that he's all-knowing and unquestionable, but a pleasant dream would be nice just every now and again, Your Holiness. Now, where was I? Oh yes, being utterly ripped from my nightmares into the real world, where it seemed, by the faces of my bedfellows, that a real nightmare was occurring. I have to say, it wasn't shocking for me. It was quite normal. Just another Tuesday night in my life. Although I soon realized it wasn't a Tuesday, though, when the number of beautiful faces linked to naked bodies in my bed would never equate to a school night. I semi-sat up, smiling, trying to tidy my hair into a semi-acceptable mess for... Who have we got here? Oh, Fliss! Fliss! Bliss! Chris! And... Donna! I know, nothing's ever perfect in this utterly imperfect world. They were all looking frightened and motioning in that silent manner that they had to do something. I think they think it's sexy and mysterious to be quiet, or maybe they just are quiet. I don't know. They were trying to point to the noise that seemed to be everything in the world right now. It hadn't even registered in my mind yet, but when it did, it was unforgettable. I'd never heard anything quite like it before. It was pain. It was hurt. And it was bestial. It wasn't fury yet. Not yet. So maybe... maybe... oh, of course. Maybe I could do something about it. Yes, down to me again. How utterly annoying. Always bloody Simon. I mean... look at these ladies here and listen to that sound. Which would be a more worthy exercise for my exploration, I ask you. I was shaken from this pleasant thought and lifted to my feet by the gaggle of naked women as they pointed at the door. A door that, because of the last 24 or 30, whatever, hours, I had difficulty focusing on. Fairy dust and malt whiskey are not the greatest mixture for a man of my years. Although... I am able to keep the old end up, as it were, in the ladies' department. Smiled rather smugly to myself. As the Stoics say, find gratitude for the small things in life, and you'll be happy. Not that it's a small thing, but I've just never had to drop the blue pill, you know, to get stood to attention in my life. Although I do believe it's a modern... I digress. I looked around for something to drink, but was pushed towards the door by several hands as the noise got noisier and more pertinent to the moment. I was utterly bamboozled by it, but as usual, I'd been sent here to do a job by God, and when you work for the Almighty, a hangover and exhaustion from fornication are probably not an allowable reason to shirk and have time off. I stumbled barefoot to the door, and reached the door handle on my third try. It was concerning how much concentration it took to get hold of the handle, but the world was slowly resolving itself into whatever this world was. I paused for a moment and shook my head to get the last of the sleep from it. Something wasn't right. I cupped my hand to my mouth to sniff my own breath. It was okay. Wasn't that... something was wrong, though. Ah, no pants! I smirked to myself. When working for the Lord, it would be utterly remiss of me not to be wearing pants. Fliss smiled as she passed me some pants. I laughed. She always had a great sense of humour, and this made me feel a lot better in this strange moment. I don't think the pink lacy thong is appropriate for God's work, do you? But I suppose it's the thought that counts, and I will keep it in mind. I said, as I smiled at her and gave her a small kiss. I winked at her before I picked my Calvins off the bedpost and tried to put them on with a bit of gentlemanly aplomb. This actually meant I hopped around the room in a circle on one foot a couple of times before getting the right bits of me in the right holes. Once armored for war in crisp white cotton, I placed my hand on the door handle. And here we go again.
Well, now the rage came. Now the rage. I was the werewolf. And one body holding two souls. Holding two souls now, so full of rage that this body could not contain it. Things were moving around me. Things were trying to get away from me. I couldn't move. My physical body was locked solid in rigor. Could not control it. The pain's so intense, I could not get past this. I couldn't breathe. Yet, I was breathing at a ridiculous rate. I couldn't do anything. The rhythm of my heartbeat was so intense that it thought it was going to burst in my chest. I could hear screaming and running all around me. I could sense panic on top of the panic that I felt. Something came too close and I grabbed it without looking, pinning it harshly to the floor. It was physically feeble now and held in my grasp. I could have killed it, just simple with little effort. And it cried and pleaded. I moved my head over it to see it as a whole. I was going to kill it deliciously. I was going to let it know that I was going to kill it, and then I was going to kill it. My right clawed hand was big enough to pin it across its chest to the floor, and I settled my weight into its rib cage. I started to crush, slowly. Initially making its breathing somewhat difficult, but enjoying its pathetic distress. It mewled and it cried. It was a pathetic, disgusting thing. I looked at its face. Its eyes were full of terror. Of course they were. The thing was hysterical. It was flailing its arms at my arm that could just hold it there indefinite without any consequence. I growled, that is it, as it tried to wiggle its way free. No! Then, those dark eyes were green. The emerald chips at the heart of Sally's eyes looked back at me. The face changed from harsh yet beautiful to... Oh my God, the imperfection of the little scar on the end of her nose. The freckles, the tousled red hair, the lips slightly pouted with a trickle of blood escaping the left corner. I stopped my incremental pressure and froze. Sally? I started to breathe a little easier when I saw her. A flame of something was struck inside my chest. No. No. Not possible. I closed my eyes and shook my head. And when I focused on her again, it wasn't her. It was just some unimportant girl, some random from the night before, something for me to kill, to destroy, to enjoy, to... But those eyes, even though they were no longer Sally's, those eyes, I now understood the horror in those eyes. The eyes I would typically enjoy the sight of the fear in and the horror that pervaded were normally... You know, that's why I did this, to feel the power. We all live for power. We all live for it. But now I knew the feeling that those eyes portrayed, that they showed me. They showed me that what I was feeling. They showed me what I now understood. I sniffed the neck. It wasn't Sally, but I gently lifted my paw anyway, taking my weight from her and letting her go. I couldn't do it. I simply turned my back to her as I returned to my own little world of horror, and Even killing and hurt was not a help. I heard the girl scramble to her feet, breathing hard. She paused for a second, probably in disbelief at what was happening, thinking that I would, you know, just leap at her any moment. She just stood. And then she ran. I smiled as I felt what she felt for a moment. I could imagine the relief of her survival. Was I truly now impotent? Was this me now? I was raging fused, but unable to carry out any of the violence that I needed to exercise these emotions of ours.
The professor. I walked down the corridor towards the noise. This was my normal pattern. Everybody was running the other way, while I, of course, was doing the opposite. Yes, God, you must be laughing right now. You old joker, you. Now, you may think I'm a mighty brave sort who is doing this out of some kind of honor-born reason, but as usual, you are utterly mistaken. I was doing this because nobody else was, and it was my job to do it. The corridor was empty, but the noise I walked towards was getting more intense. And of course it was. I turned to Will's suite, which was the site of the noise. Of course it was. What the hell had he done now? I mean, I liked the chap, but he was an utter liability at times. Trouble just poured off him and flooded the sights around him wherever he went. Well, I thought, here goes. The door was open and the room was a mess. No one was in the room that I could see. That was a good thing. They'd done that incredibly sensible thing of running away, as far as I could tell. I could see no death, no destruction, which was quite impressive, as I knew that when we dropped Will off here last night, he was one of 14 who went into that room. 14! Huh. What it is to be young. I moved from the reception room into the bedroom. It was dimly lit in there, but there was something in there. The furthest corner of the room was dark. Too dark, in fact. It was so dark that something unnatural had to be there. It was the werewolf. He was curled in a ball facing the corner of the room like a naughty child sent to sit and think about what he'd done. The noise it made was distress and sadness. It seemed utterly wrong. I had never heard a beast sound like this before, but the noise it made, the noise, it was sheer sadness. I found it utterly heartrending in its lamentations. The hairs rose on the back of my neck. Will, I called. I didn't know if I should really be intruding on his moment, but I needed to know what had happened.
Will.
The beast snarled in response, so I took a moment and wiped my own sweaty palms on my underpants. This was only going to go one of two ways, and although I couldn't die, it didn't mean I enjoyed being killed. Can you imagine taking life-ending injuries? Feeling the untender tearing, the ripping, and the destruction of your body every time. It's not my thing. Other fellas might enjoy that kind of treatment, but not me. The wolf shook as it emoted. It was breaking its heart as it lay there on the floor. I felt waves of hurt come flooding from him. And it was horrifying to feel. I made my way to the prone figure. He had somehow wedged himself between the bed and the far corner of the room, looking for a safe place to hide from the world. I stood over him for a moment, unsure how I felt about this situation and the man himself. He was a horrendous being. He was speculatively pure evil. Then, suddenly, my heart went to him. What had happened to him? I can feel it, you know. I mean, I've been an utter bastard in the past, but I'm remedying that. And part of that process is dealing with the things I've done and the pain it creates. Will, I said, tentatively, was I doing the right thing? A clawed arm lashed out and... Well, suddenly, I was still at the door of the bedroom once more. He was still capable of killing me then. After being reborn or manifesting or whatever, there are a few moments of discombobulation before things typically slip back into the correct order. I wandered back over to the deflated werewolf, this time keeping a distance that I thought would be safe enough to prevent me from being killed again. Will, it's I, your friend, Simon. What on earth is wrong, old chap? Did they give you the bill for last night? I chortled, trying to use humour, but as soon as it was said, I knew it was not appropriate. Will, please let me help you if I can. Again, I reached out to touch the lying beast. I was waiting for it, the lash, the bite, but it did not come. I touched the fur. I couldn't help myself. It had the consistency of wire wool and was matte black in colour. Will, old pal, what's wrong? The wolfman was now just the man once more, and next to him, sitting watching, was the giant wolf soul, Fen. Will continued to cry quietly into his hands.
I think to understand, Simon, you need to come with me,
said Fen, the wolf soul, as he turned and walked back to the reception room at the front of the suite. He wandered forlornly up to a little pile of things next to a box on a table at the centre of the room.
This was delivered here this morning. Take a look,
said Fen, as he sat to watch my reaction. I was obviously confused, but I quickly looked at the items he pointed to. There appeared to be a few scraps of fur and a pair of old warped wire-rimmed glasses, the aviator type.
No, you're going to have to do more than that. Pick him up, have a proper look,
said the wolf.
I tell you, we weren't ready for this,
he told me. I picked up the glasses and examined them. They'd seen a hard life, but they'd once been either gold or brass-plated.
They were Malcolm's, you know, Malcolm's glasses. He worked for us at home and was taking back vampires.
I nodded in recognition of what he was saying, placing them down with a hint of reverence. I then lifted one of the scraps of fur. It was a cured, tiny pelt about a foot long. You could see the shape of the creature it was taken from. Tail, four legs, but it was so little. I lifted it to my face to feel its texture on my cheek. All the years of hunting had taught me to recognize most pelts, but this was no rabbit, no hare. It was something I recognize, but it couldn't be. Not this small.
It's wolf,
said Fen, anger in his internal voice. Confused, I turned to the soul, dropping the pelt away from my face to examine it much closer. No, it can't be. It's far too small. Far too small to be, for... Oh, God. My heart sank as I held the tiny wolf pelt. Oh, God, I repeated as I looked at the tiny scrap and then to the sky. Fen now seemed incapable of speaking. He just sat there, those amber eyes full of fire, dull in his black shadow of a head, as he stared into a distance that no one else could see. Oh, God, I repeated. It took me a while to gather myself for what I had to do now. I've done difficult things before. They never get any easier. There are things that we do in life that we can just never normalize. This was one of those things. I walked back through to the bedroom to the man weeping on the floor. I had no words. There were no words for this. What words could there be? Sorry? Sorry? Sorry is utterly useless. I watched him for a while before padding up to the man and sitting cross-legged by him. I lifted his head and shoulders from the floor. I took the man in my arms and I held him. I let him pour the hurt out of himself as he broke down again and again. I rocked him like the tormented child he was in that moment, and I held him tight as he released the feelings that needed to be felt. I rested my cheek now on his before speaking to him. I promise you this, Will. I swear this to you. They will pay by all that is holy or unholy. They will pay. I swear, whatever it takes, the right or the wrong, they will be brought to judgment for this. My judgment has been cast. I will help you utterly destroy them. There was movement in the corner. She was there. Of course she was. Lucifer. Lucifer was looking upon this. I closed my eyes. It wouldn't remove her from the moment, but I wouldn't give her the satisfaction of knowing that I'd seen her. I knew not for whom this torment had been curated, but I tell you this, I felt his pain. A glooming silence now that morning brought. The sun, for sorrow, would not show his head. For 'neath the fallen angel's spiteful gaze, all are punished.
Please follow us on any platform that you follow us on. Rate us, review us, do stuff. You're great. Bye.